Chairs No Waiting, episode number 279, Jack Prince. Two Chairs No Waiting is brought to you each week by the fine folks over at Weaver's Department Store. Drop by over at Weaver's. Check out all the wonderful things they have there for sale that are any Andy Griffith Show fan would love. It's weaversdepartmentstore.com. Go check it out. Two Chairs No Waiting is also brought to you by donations from listeners just like you. Executive producer of Two Chairs No Waiting, number 279, is Tom Rusk. Hey, Tom. Thanks for donating, and thanks for supporting the show. Thank you to the Mayberry Band. Congratulations, gentlemen. That sounded awesome. Thank you for being here with me. Wow, another week in Mayberry, and here you are to spend some time with me. And this week, we're going to be talking about Jack Prince. I'm your host for Two Chairs No Waiting, Alan Newsom, and I hope you've had a chance to get to know a little bit about me over the time that you've been listening to the podcast. But if you're new, you should know that for the last, 20 years or so, I've been portraying Floyd the Barber at Mayberry events around the country. I've been running the iMayberry.com website for longer than I want to remember, longer than I've been doing Floyd. And I also run the website for Weaver's Department Store, and the Rerun Watchers Club is the one that actually makes the proceeds from the sales there, but I actually do the website portion of the site. I also run iMayberry Community. Anyway, if you don't know, I'm just trying to give you a little information so you'll know who I am, because you may not. And it's always fun to get to know each other. So I am your host here at Two Chairs, as I've said that already. And we're going to be talking about Jack Prince. Now, if you don't remember who Jack Prince is or was, Jack Prince was Rafe Hollister. Now, you remember Rafe, I believe. There he is, up in the top corner if you're watching the show. But Rafe Hollister was the one who came to Mayberry. He also played Ben Sewell, played several roles. Well, I had somebody. I was in Westminster, South Carolina, the home of Tom Rusk, who I was just talking about. Just this past week, we had Mayberry Comes to Westminster. And while I was there, somebody asked me about Jack Prince. They said, I can't find any information out there about Jack Prince. Can you find some? And I said, well, you know, I'll head back home and I'll see what I can find. Well, what do you know? Thanks to Jim Clark at the Rerun Watchers Club, the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club, and the issue of The Bullet from April the 30th, 1993. It was volume 8, issue 3. I found an entire write-up about Jack Prince. And Jim is always kind enough to let us use his information. So I want to thank him before I even start this, that he does allow, you know, us to be able to just use all the wonderful information that he has gathered over the years that are related to the Andy Griffith Show Rerun Watchers Club. So let's get a little bit of background music going here. Let's see if I can get this here. Let's try this one. There we go. That way it's not just me reading. And let's go find out a little bit about Jack Prince, Rafe Hollister himself. Well, Lady Luck smiled on the world on January the 19th, 1920. That's the day in Shreveport, Louisiana, that young Betty Prince and John Upton Upchurch had a son who was given his father's name. But Lady Luck was saddened 3 years later when Father John died of tuberculosis. Betty was convinced that she was too young to raise her son on her own and allowed him to be brought up instead by her late husband's sister, Neva, and husband, James Liner, who promised to care for the young boy and see that he received a proper education. The young prince was baptized Jack Liner in Monroe, Louisiana, in 1927. The same year, he also learned about his real mother. That was when Betty Prince learned that she had not only allowed the Liners to raise her son, but that the papers she had signed 4 years earlier made the Liners young Jack's legal adoptive parents. The Liners both worked in their dry cleaning and laundry business. Plus, James was founder of Monroe's K KMLB radio station. Killing two birds with one stone, the Liners kept Jack in school virtually year-round. Fulfilling their promise to educate him, while they also taking advantage of the built-in babysitting that the school provided. That role of school became even more important after Neva died in 1932 when Jack was only 12 years old. Jack managed to skip a few grades in school, and by the age of 16, he prepared to attend Louisiana Tech and did so for half a year. Then he began his search for his mother, whom he found in El Dorado, Arkansas. He moved to Arkansas to be near her and enrolled in Magnolia A&M, home at the time of the world champion milking cow. Jack continued his liberal arts education until summer break, and when he realized that the world was a great big place and it was his to explore. Full of adventure, he took a bus to the nearest happening place, St. Louis, and arrived as a 275-pound 17-year-old with $3 in his pocket. But Lady Luck's brother was driving that city bus that day, and he referred Jack to a boarding house run by the driver's parents. First thing they made Jack do was sit down and write his mother a letter, let her know where he was and that he was okay. Not exactly an experienced member of the workforce, Jack suddenly faced the reality of figuring out how he was going to support himself. He began scanning the classified ads for work, but before long, his bright blue eyes spotted an ad by the St. Louis Theater seeking performers for its vaudeville amateur show. Yes, Jack had a special talent. As early as an unbelievably young age of 6, he had already been noticed by teacher Clara Hall for his remarkable singing and singing of the usual routine, My Country Tis of Thee. You know, he was singing that and she noticed it. She told the Liners Jack ought to receive lessons. And so he soon was under the guidance of his singing teacher, Mary Bush. It wasn't Mrs. Lesh or Mrs. Poultice, but I guess we can forgive him for that. So he took singing lessons from Mary Bush. For his first recital, he performed a musical version of Joyce Kilmer's Trees. He also began performing frequently on the Liners radio station. He also continued to sing for fun throughout his childhood. By the time he arrived in St. Louis, he was, though classically trained, still an amateur when he auditioned for the vaudeville act. His beautiful whispering rendition of Stardust was such a roaring success that he not only won $10 amateur night prize money, but he was also asked by the stage manager, Eve Ross, to return for the remaining 6 weeks of the vaudeville show at that theater. Jack had set out to discover the world, but ironically, the world had discovered Jack Prince instead. As luck again would have it, famed trumpeteer Henry Hot Lips Busey was in the audience during the last week of the St. Louis Theater's performance. Jack's amazing ability to blend his soft tenor and deep baritone within the same song so impressed Busey that he invited Jack to tour with him for the next 5 weeks as an extra singer. Wow, what? He is a lucky fella. That included 2 weeks in Chicago's renowned Chez Paris. Jack continued his busy schedule of touring popular nightclubs and mixing bits of comedy in with his singing. For 4 years, he was booked solid at the Clemiso Supper Club in Chicago. I'm sure I didn't say that right. Anyway, it was a supper club in Chicago where he sang production numbers and did his own vaudeville-style act. When the United States entered World War II, and Jack answered the call to duty in 1942 as a member of the 13th Special Services Company based in France. While in the Army, Jack and fellow servicemen formed a band called the Chowhounds that entertained Allied troops throughout Europe. All the while, he was continuing to build his vaudeville experience as a performer. Immediately after the war was over, band leader Shep Fields was touring military camps as the troops waited to return home. He asked if there was anyone in the audience who could perform, and Jack's buddies nudged him. hey, get up on stage. Immediately impressed by Jack's jazz version of Old Man River, Fields told Jack that if he ever wanted a job singing, to look him up. Well, sure enough, when Jack received his honorable discharge in 1945, he headed to New York on his honeymoon with his bride, Sally Salzler. She was the first of his six wives for Jack, who humbly admits, I was a diehard romantic and a lousy husband. The young couple was dancing at the Roosevelt Grill when Jack tangoed over to bandleader Fields and said, remember me? After two fast years as vocalist with Fields, Jack set out on his own and continued to tour top nightclubs throughout the country for more or less specializing. He was more or less specializing on the circuit in the Southeast. He actually became settled enough to buy a home in Miami. It wasn't long, though, before Jack got the call to join a national tour of Guys and Dolls as Nicely Johnson, the role created on Broadway by Stubby K. Jack and Stubby had become friends years before when they worked together in the summer circuit in the Cat Seals. Stubby recommended Jack for the role of Nicely when the hit Broadway musical began its national tour in 1951. After leaving the tour, Jack continued to play Nicely on Broadway from 1953 to 1954, and the beginning of his 10-year on-and-off-again Broadway performances. Jack recalls that he fit the bill because, quote, they were looking for a short, fat guy. They actually paid me to gain weight. He also worked for 1 year on the Johnny Carson Jell-O Hour. That's right, the Jell-O Hour, beginning in 1954. After that, Ray Bolger, you might know who that is, brought Jack to Las Vegas for the first time. Jack, Prince, and the Paupers were booked as regular act at the Casbar Lounge in the famed Sahara and soon became one of the city's most popular lounge acts. Wow, this is a lot of stuff. Jack later moved to the Dunes, where he shared the podium with swing greats Cab Calloway and Bill Eccleston. After his years in Vegas, Jack returned to New York club circus. Among the highlights was a chance to work with jazz legend Charlie Parker at the Cafe Society downtown. Quote, he was absolutely marvelous, Jack remembered. He opened with a whole new world for me and an interest in jazz, in the modern jazz and bebop and, well, and Dizzy Gillespie created, end quote. While back in New York, Jack got the call to play Marion Sam in the Broadway production of Little Abner, where he again followed in the footsteps of Stubby K. After 3 years in that role, and just as Little Abner was winding down for its Broadway closing, Jack was asked to create the role of Wash in the Broadway production of Destry Rides Again, which was scheduled to open in early 1960. Andy Griffith starred as Destry. I don't know if you knew that, but he starred as Destry. But the show wasn't too far along before the future sheriff of Mayberry was called to California to do a pilot episode of on the Danny Thomas Show. Another famous TV sheriff, Hugh O'Brien, took over the role for 2 weeks. During that time that they were together on Broadway, Jack and Andy became fast friends, sharing many of the same likes and dislikes, and both appreciative of the other's comedic and musical styles. Jack recalls that it was Andy Griffith who first got him to drink coffee black. Quote, I used to stop by Andy's dressing room. He'd invite me to join him for coffee, but it didn't have any cream or sugar. The first time I said I'd go get some from my dressing room, but Andy said not for any coffee to be drunk in his dressing room. So I learned to like my coffee black, just like Andy Griffith. After Destry, Andy Griffith, of course, had his new TV show, and Jack headed back to Las Vegas, where he joined Charlie Targian's jazz band. at the Silver Slipper. Wow. Andy Griffith would occasionally come by Vegas and would drop by to see Jack perform. On one trip, he asked Jack if he wanted to do an episode of the Andy Griffith Show. Jack said, sure, if he could work around the performance schedule. Jack's first of six appearances in Mayberry was as moonshiner Ben Sewell in Alcohol and Old Lace. That was episode number 17, which aired in January the 30th, 1961. It's still among the favorite episodes of Mayberry fans today. A masterpiece directed by Gene Reynolds and written by Charlie Stewart and Jack Edelson. A couple of months later, Jack dropped by the Andy Griffith Show set just to visit when pal Andy asked him if he wanted a part in that week's episode. They threw a pair of overalls on Jack, and he became moonshiner Luke Grainer in The Inspector. That was episode number 26, written by Stuart Nelson, again, and directed by Bob Sweeney. Jack's next appearance in Mayberry was 2 weeks later as a townsperson in the courthouse rummage sale in Andy Forecloses, episode number 28, written by Ben Gershman and Leo Solomon, and directed by Bob Sweeney. The next season, Andy Mayberry watchers were finally introduced to Rafe Hollister in Sheriff Mayberry, episode number 44. Another Gershwin, Solomon, Sweeney combo. It was a small part, but it set the stage for The County Nurse, episode number 56, which is a Stuart Ellison Sweeney operation. Jack made the most of Rafe's shot, and he has been a fan ever since. All the time that Jack was making guest appearances on the Andy Griffith Show, he is still performing at the Silver Slipper. One day, Bob Sweeney dropped by to hear Jack sing and was amazed. He said, Jack, I had no idea you could sing like that. We've got to use your singing in an episode. Well, it would be almost a year before Mayberry fans would get a chance to enjoy Jack's musical talents. In Rafe Hollister Sings, episode number 83. Ironically, Bob Sweeney was producing the Ballys of Balua TV series at the time and couldn't direct the episode. He couldn't direct it. So to this day, Jack sings praises for Bob Sweeney. Bob spoiled me. And he was good, Jack recalls. Quote, we had great rapport. I could read his face and he could read mine. I could never work with a director that I had that much affection for again. Jack's high regard for Andy Griffith is equally outspoken. He's in awe of Don Knotts. Quote, I have so much admiration for Don. It's hard to come to a comedy and do the scene exactly the same on every take or make exactly the changes you're asked to make by the director. He is by far the best actor I have ever worked with, end quote. But for his part, Jack says he really wasn't an actor. Quote, the reason I left Broadway, he says, I was a singer, not an actor. Unless it was something really simple or something like the Andy Griffith Show comes along where you're working with all those talented people like Andy and Don, Bob Sweeney. The ambiance on that show was so great. Such pride in what they were doing. Everybody in the whole crew, from the writers right down to the lighting men, were proud of the work. And I'm proud to have been even a small part of it. Writer Mike Price, Prince's roommate during those fast times, recalls the audiences might have seen more of Rafe Hollister in Mayberry. Dick Link, he says, the Andy Griffith Show associate producer and Andy Griffith's personal manager, Dick Link and some other production executives came to Las Vegas to see Jack at the Silver Slipper, where, by the way, Jack had a lifetime contract. A lifetime contract. Wow. They said they were considering expanding the role of Rafe Hollister and asked Jack what he thought about that. And Jack said, believe it or not, folks, he said, quote, nah, fellas, I'm a singer. When I can't sing anymore, I'll see about acting, end quote. Few people in those days knew Jack better than Mike Price, who has nothing but praise about his former roommate. Everybody in that town loved Jack, Mike remembers. Vegas was in its heyday in those days, and we were too. The top Vegas performers were dropped by the Silver Slipper to hear Jack sing after they finished their own performances. You know, guys like Tony Bennett, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., and Frank Sinatra. The thing about Jack, Mike says, was that he was classically trained in opera. He had the huge barrel chest, and he could belt out songs with his tremendous control. But he also had a very delicate voice that could master the tender songs. And while his singing evolved to show into show tunes, his heart was always in jazz and blues and country. He sang gospel, and he could get the Vegas audiences snapping their fingers and stomping to those rollicking spirituals. It was an amazing sight. True to his desire to be a singer, Jack pursued singing full force after his last appearance as Ralph Hollister in 1963. He joined Harry James and left the Silver Slipper and stayed with the band until 1964. He then picked up a quicker pace and headed back to Florida, where he played lots of small clubs over the next few years, and he finally gave that up, gave up that fast lifestyle for good in 1975 and headed back to Las Vegas, where he did all kinds of jobs. One of those jobs even required a bit of acting. He was hired by a casino to play the slot machine and jump up and down and scream, I hit it, every time he hit a jackpot. I didn't know they paid people to do that. Oh, he said they would reimburse him, and when he won, everybody knew it, is what he said. Jack resumed singing in Vegas lounges again during the early 80s, but considered himself semi-retired. A heart attack in 1985 curtailed his singing, but it didn't stop Jack from making another important contribution to Vegas life, this time as a security officer. Wow, he's a security officer. I didn't read that. Maybe seeing Barney Fife in action all those years had an effect on him. In the last few years, Jack has treated Mayberry fans to three trips down memory lane. Once in 1980 for the 30th cast reunion in Charlotte, North Carolina, and in 1990 as well for another reunion show. And then also at the Opryland back in 1991. After all these years, he's still a showstopper. Now, this was again written back in 93, and it says, today, Jack is retired and living in Las Vegas, a town where changes of luck occur every second. But more than most, Jack has witnessed life's ups and downs, but there's no one who considers himself more fortunate to be where he is than Jack Prince. He lives with Linda Guilford, one of his three beloved stepdaughters, her husband Mark, and their daughter Tiffany. He's proud of his three biological children, all by his first marriage. Daughter Cindy Lou, who's a owner of a real estate business in Australia. Wow. And two sons, Steve, who builds custom homes in Oregon, and Larry, who works in advertisement in California. Jack's had many roles in his career, but says, now I'm playing my favorite role, Grandpa. I've heard that a lot. Lady Luck clearly has her favorites, and one of them is Jack Prince. Closing note. I have a closing note here from Jim Clark. Cataracts have slowed Jack down in responding to letters from fans for the last year or so, but following surgery this spring, he'll soon be back up to speed with his correspondence. He expresses his deep feelings for the fans he has met and corresponded with in recent years. Quote, they really taught me what love is, end quote. So there you go, folks. That's all about Ralph Hollister. There he is, Jack Prince. Now, that's all I could dig up. I hope you guys enjoyed that. And tonight's episode, I wanted to do something a little bit different. I wanted to go and find something that I thought you guys would enjoy as a closer. So rather than the normal closing music, we're going to have this. We're going to hear from Ralph himself. So folks, before I let it start playing, I'd love to hear from you. You can give me a call at 888-684-8415 or email me at floyd@imayberry.com or just drop by Two Chairs No Waiting com, and you'll find all the ways to get in touch with me right there. So, folks, until next time, enjoy this, and we'll see you then in Mayberry. Good night, everybody.
Look down that lonesome road before you travel on. Look up, look up, and seek your maker. For Gabriel blows his horn. Weary children, such a load, trudging down that lonesome road. Look down, look down that lonesome road before you travel on. Weary toting such a heavy load, trudging down that lonesome road. Look down, look down that lonesome road before you travel on.